back together. You and I, midweek Wednesday, April 13th, 2022, on Connecticut Today. I had a chance to chat with the Yankee Institute for Public Policy analyst Ken Girardin on the latest state employee contract proposal and what he saw when he broke down the numbers. Fairfield GOP State Rep. Laura Devlin joined us again to talk about the current budget talks at the state capitol. Ken Girardin is joining us right now. We've had Ken on. He's the Director of Policy and Research at the Yankee Institute for Public Policy in the state. Hey, Ken, it's Paul. How are you, sir?
Hey, Paul. Good to be back with you.
Hey, good to have you on, Ken. And I know it's tough because according to the unions and to some members of the General Assembly, you work, Ken, for a shadowy right-wing organization that won't release its donors. So I hope you can sleep I hope you can sleep at night, Ken. Are you okay with that, Ken?
It's awfully difficult. The really funny thing about the criticism that's been leveled against us, particularly on tax policy, is that at the end of the day, most of my job involves drilling into state and federal tax information, census data, and Department of Labor figures. My work comes from looking at the government's own data and just putting the numbers out there to the public.
Yeah, and you know,
and it's amazing to see just the pretzels people twist themselves in.
I know.
Getting upset about them.
And again, like Carol Platt Leibow has said on this program, Ken, I'm sure you agree with her, your boss there. All right, well, if you don't like what we do, give us some alternatives. If you don't like this stuff that we're shedding light on, like you say, which is just numbers, what's the alternative? You never get anything, Ken. You never get any alternatives here.
Well, Carol's a moderate. I wouldn't grant any concessions about the policy prescriptions we've been putting out for the state because they're all backed up by solid numbers.
Absolutely. And speaking of those numbers, Ken, you have run some of those numbers about the specifics that we know about the proposed deal now that's been, I guess, ratified or approved by most of CBAC. The General Assembly will look at this. Your first point here I see is interesting. The overall cost. You say, and Yankee says, the agreements are going to cost more than they appear. Talk about that.
Sure. So what we're talking about is the labor contract that's going to cover state employees now through the middle of 2025. The last group of contracts, the bulk of them expired in July at the start of July 2021. So these have been getting renegotiated over a little over the past year. The governor came with this tentative agreement that his administration and the UConn trustees and some other state agencies had reached with these unions. They came to an agreement in early March. We finally only got the details in April, April 1st, appropriately. And what these agreements call for is an immediate cash bonus of $3,500 per full-time employee, automatic wage increases across the board of about 2.5% retroactive to last summer, then again this July, then again next July, some seniority-based raises, again, retroactive to last summer, then again another one this July, and then another one in July 2023. The problem with that arrangement, first of all, it's extremely costly, but the real problem with that arrangement is for the fourth year of the contract, what the state is saying is, we'll negotiate with the unions again over pay when we get to 2024. Now, that's a pretty easy way to reduce the cost as it appears to the General Assembly when you're coming in to have it ratified. Pretending that the General Assembly, barring some outside emergency, isn't going to give raises in a year is pretty preposterous based on their track record and based on the realities on the ground in Connecticut. So what they've done essentially is they're giving three rounds of raises and pretending that a fourth isn't going to happen when for all intents and purposes we know it is. So you add up the costs of the bonuses and just the first two rounds of raises, that costs over $1 billion. And that's by the state's own incomplete cost estimates.
Yeah.
These were spreadsheets that were turned over by state agencies that had a lot of gaps and bad assumptions. Any business owner who's listening will appreciate this. A lot of state agencies pretended there would be no increase in payroll taxes if you gave folks 15 or 20% raises. they pretended that you weren't going to also have to pay added Medicare taxes, added Social Security taxes, all that stuff. There were lots of really, really sloppy assumptions. And like I said, just the crude back of the envelope calculation is that the cost is going to be over $1 billion just for the first 27 months. And that's real. We're talking real money.
That's real money.
Here.
Yeah. When you have B,
and
when
we're
you
not
start
even talking about the added pension debt.
Yeah, and there's other stuff in this, including, and Ken, hang on, we'll be right back with you. Ken Girardin's the guest, Yankee Institute here, Director of Policy and Research. There's also things in here about, quote-unquote, a scab list. We'll tell you about that, what that is. Coming up, first, traffic and weather together right here on WICC. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Back to open phones in just a bit. Few more minutes here with Ken Girardin. He is Director of Policy and Research at the Yankee Institute for Public Policy. And Ken, we continue here. And again, the numbers here are voluminous, as you have said, and as I've spoken with Carol about this before. But there are other things in this that are kind of interesting, Ken, and those often fascinate me more. For example, you cite scab lists here and what managers are allowed to hear and not hear from union pitches or union activity. Talk about those.
Yeah, Governor Lamont had promised to give Connecticut an anti-Wisconsin moment, and a lot of folks have been scratching their heads on what that meant. And it really means turning over a lot more power to the public sector unions to dictate what happens in state agencies. One thing that the unions really want badly is the ability to pressure more new state workers into joining. For the past 4 years, state workers have had the right to choose whether or not to join. A lot of them have chosen to leave or not join in the first place. And so what the unions did in these negotiations is get the state to agree to pull managers out of the room when the union gives their sales pitch, which means there isn't going to be anybody from the state to make sure that nothing coercive happens or inaccurate. And then speaking about those lists, the state is also going to be committed to turn over these lists once a month to the union, naming every person who didn't pay dues but otherwise could have in the previous month, which is pretty bad, coupled with the fact that the state had already separately agreed to turn over the home addresses of those same folks.
I remember I remember that. And for people, explain that whole home address thing, because I remember talking about it on the air and going, what? I mean, that reeks of harassment. But talk about that home address thing.
Basically, the unions got the General Assembly to pass a law that entitles them to all sorts of personal information about everyone who works for the state. And they say this is necessary because they have to represent those people as part of the collective bargaining process. But there's really no good reason to be, you know, knocking on people's doors. I mean, in a past life, I'm pretty sure my wife had this happen to her, where folks show up at the door and it's, you know, hey, nice house. By the way, you should be paying us $800 a year.
Really? Wow. Boy,
I wouldn't say she was. I wouldn't say that she was subject to outright intimidation on the spot, but just the dynamic in terms of the pressure dynamic that people should be otherwise protected from. And when this bill came up, other people made the really good point that you're talking about divulging really personal information of potentially, you know, domestic violence victims and other folks who really don't want their information getting shared that way.
So, Ken, finally, was I correct in reading? Maybe not. Was I correct, though, in reading that, you know, the General Assembly could say if they have any problem with these things, I'll vote yes if you pull that out or strip that out? Or is that just pie in the sky thinking to even think that there would be any opposition to any aspect of this?
I mean, historically speaking, the General Assembly hasn't been afraid to say no to bad labor deals. Back in 1994, they turned back not one, not two, but five different arbitration awards that would have been granted. And not only did they turn them back, I think they turned them back by supermajorities. This is back in 1994 under Governor Weicker. So lawmakers historically haven't had a problem saying no to bad deals. And my recommendation in this situation would be vote no, and then put some parameters down there that tell the governor what kind of deal you would vote for. Because right now, as it stands, this is a bad deal for state taxpayers.
Ken Girard, and Ken, thank you. Ken is at the Yankee Institute for Public Policy. Check him out online, yankeeinstitute.org. Ken is the Director of Policy and Research. Ken, good to chat with you. Take care, and we'll talk down the road. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
Appreciate it. Ken Girardin there. Check it out online, yankeeinstitute.org. Look, state employees have to get paid. Nobody's saying they don't have to get paid. Nobody's saying they shouldn't get paid or shouldn't get decent benefits, but some of the stuff in there, scab lists, come on. And again, on the surface, you would say, well, why should the managers be in the room when there's a union pitch made? Well, like Ken just said, supposing somebody is in the room and basically in very delicate language saying, hey, we would recommend that you not say no to the union because that could come back to bite you in the end. I mean, again, if they're private meetings, you don't know what's being said, right? Is there coercion? Is there intimidation? Maybe yes, maybe no. You don't know. We want to check into what is going on with the state capitol and the governor. Now, this did not come from Republicans, folks. The governor is kind of warning his own party, don't play around with the spending cap, the budget cap here. Don't go crazy on, tax breaks here for certain demographics. And joining us right now is Fairfield State Rep. Laura Devlin, who is one of the members of the General Assembly's Finance Committee. Laura, by the way, of course, as you've heard, is the candidate for lieutenant governor with Bob Stefanowski in the coming election. Laura, it's Paul. Good to speak with you again. How are you? And congratulations on the run.
Hi, Paul. Thanks so much. It's always great to speak with you.
Well, thank you. And we'll get into the campaign thing down the road, Laura. Plenty of time for that. Yep. I wanted to have you on today, though. The governor came out, and it was picked up by a lot of the hardcore media outlets with politics in mind. He's kind of, what is he doing? He's waving his finger at his own party, saying, hey, we have this buffer, right, built into spending. Let's not go beyond that, even though we're flush with all this cash. Explain to my listeners what's going on here.
Okay, so let me try to keep this simple because it can get a little bit wonky too.
Okay.
but what the governor is saying is right. In 2017, the legislature was balanced for the first time in decades. And as a result of that, we were able to put in some structural reforms to get our state's finances in order. So when you hear the governor taking credit for all of the money in the rainy day fund and all of these things, that is because of the structural reforms that were put in 2017 that created a spending cap. You can only spend so much, included a borrowing cap. You can only borrow so much. And because of the volatility, mostly with capital gains, income from capital gains taxes, that goes into fill the rainy day fund. And when that reaches a certain level, we pay off our pensions. And that's how the governor has been able to say, hey, we're making all these great pension payments because of the structural reforms we put in 2017. What happened in the Finance Committee and has been happening, which is really, really disheartening, because we are looking at significant deficits in 2024. And what has happened is the Democrat majority proposed a program that basically will be funded by diverting the money around so it won't factor into the spending cap or any of these reforms, and it sort of creates this offshore account to fund another new program that will cost taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars for years on out. So, that should not happen. It is not fair to the taxpayers of our state, but that's what's currently on the table from the Democrats from a revenue perspective.
All right, Laura, hang on. We'll get deeper into this because it is fascinating. State Rep. Laura Devlin of Fairfield is joining us. Back with her momentarily, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC, and a midweek Wednesday, Connecticut Today. Couple more minutes with a Fairfield Trumbull GOP State Rep. Laura Devlin, General Assembly District Number 134. She sits on the General Assembly's Finance, Revenue, and Bonding Commission, and the General Assembly looking right now at possibly getting around. There's a rumor, the governor wagging his finger yesterday at his own caucus, saying don't play games with the budget. We're in a pretty good shape here. Let's not go crazy. Laura, I was watching the news conference earlier today from some of the Democratic leadership, Speaker Ritter and Majority Leader Rojas, and they talked about, Laura, quite a somewhat of a disagreement between finance, revenue, and bonding and the appropriations folks, talking about it being quite large. What are your thoughts on that? Because they were pretty open, saying that we're not kind of close on this yet.
Right. So, and I don't serve on the Appropriations Committee, so I'm not really familiar with what they did come out with, but you are absolutely right. The packages kind of don't match up. And honestly, I think that's a change that we should make in our government. And when I first joined the legislature, I was so surprised about how we handle budgeting. It's not like you do in your household. Right. So like in your household, you sit down, you figure out how much money do we have to spend? Mm-hmm. Okay, what are our priorities? How are we going to do this? And in the state, the way it works is appropriations figures out, okay, what are we going to spend? And then they bring it over to finance and say, okay, come up with the money.
Yeah.
And it's not, yes, common sense.
I also heard, Laura, that I guess within about a half a mil or so, the governor is going to kind of probably, they said that this morning, generally get this car tax plan through at maybe, what, 32, 33, 34 mils. Is the discussion now among everybody within a mil or two? Is that right?
So I'll be honest, Paul, I did not see that conference, and I'm not exactly sure, you know, what they were sharing out of there.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't been part of those discussions to be able to weigh in on that.
What are your thoughts on that plan, though, Laura, overall? Whatever it is, you know, 20, the governor wants 29. Some people say 33, 34. I guess we're going to eventually get something out of there. What are your thoughts on the governor's pitch to kind of fix overall the car tax thing, the vehicle tax, which, geez, Laura, I don't know anybody who likes it, I don't know anybody who likes the way Connecticut taxes motor vehicles. Both sides of the aisle seem to not like it.
Right. And you could say the same thing for property taxes overall, right?
Yeah.
But the challenge is, and what I think most people are wary about, and certainly different leaders that I have heard of from across the state, is the concern that municipalities are going to be left on a hook here, and somehow it's going to end up, you know, costing taxpayers more in the long run. So, you know, sometimes these deals don't quite work out the way we would hope that they would.
And I guess, Laura, going forward, the idea is if we do this, there's got to be a best effort made, right, to make sure that, as you say, the municipalities don't get caught short here. So the money has to be isolated, right, protected from being pilfered if this does come to fruition.
So, but Paul, how many times have you heard that?
Oh, yeah.
Right? And we raise the sales tax in order to give more money to our municipalities.
Yeah.
We do so many different things, and the money just doesn't seem to get back there in whole, and partly because there are more and new expensive programs created each year that, you know, are liabilities for our taxpayers.
Yeah, it really is the vicious cycle, isn't it?
Yeah, we need some big change.
All right, State Rep. Laura Devlin, District 134. Thanks for joining us, Laura. Good luck, and we'll talk down the road. Have a great day. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul.
All right, appreciate it. There you go, State Rep. Laura Devlin, District 134. General Assembly District representing Fairfield and Trumbull. So, and that's the concern. The concern that she just mentioned is the concern you're hearing from a lot of people on both sides of the aisle, right? Left and right. That, okay, if you set this cap, whether it's 29 mils, 30, 32, 33 mils, if you set this cap, right, and you say a municipality, any town, Connecticut, can only tax a vehicle up to 30 mils, but like Laura said, well, wait a minute, though, so-and-so city or town was taxing that at 35 mils last year. Who makes up that extra 5 mils that cities and towns need? And again, you know, you isolate things, but the money sometimes is never there.